We are going to find out about how executives here in the UAE feel about Brexit. The emerging markets intelligence and research firm, Emir, has just held a C-suite level briefing, so the top guys, looking at the impact of Brexit on Dubai-based businesses. And in the studio to run us through what they were discussing and some of the data that's come out of that meeting is Trevor McFarlane, the founder and CEO of Emir. Good morning, Trevor. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, folks. It's great to be here.
Talk to us before we look into some of the data that you've gathered. Who has this information come from?
We had around 100 CEOs of multinational companies, family businesses. We had some government officials there as well. And we garner these insights through our app. We ask survey questions. What's the impact of Brexit on your operations here in the region? Is it a low impact, moderate impact, or high impact event?
Okay, so these are fairly high-level thoughts that we're getting here. How much of an impact do these people feel that Brexit will have on Dubai?
It's a bit of a mixed picture, but when you combine moderate to high impact, we're talking around 56% of them. And I think it's quite interesting, of course, you have to ascertain whether you're a British company, an American multinational, or where you come from, and you have to ascertain if it's a positive or negative impact, because if you're a British multinational, perhaps the first assumption would be that this is bad news. But we heard from several really big British multinationals saying actually in the short term, they've done incredibly well out of this. One of the companies does 95% of its business outside the UK, and therefore with the currency change, with dollar-denominated contracts going back into the UK, it's worth an extra $1 billion, that's with a B, Brandy, $1 billion onto their balance sheet. Their share price actually done well as well. So in the short term, it's a mixed picture for some of these companies.
Yeah, the exporters have done very well out of this as well. But the thing that surprised me most has been the mood on the street, really. Data out in the UK on spending said that it's been better since Brexit than before Brexit as well. So,
yeah, but Mark, we have to, you know, this is a tire that's a puncture, looking at data from 1 month or 2 months, and it's gone both ways. When you look at PMI data, some were saying in the earlier month that this is spelled bad news for Brexit, next month there was a recovery, this is good news for Brexit, there's a Brexit boom. The UK hasn't even left the European Union. We look at this in a year's time, I would say.
I guess so, but I mean, it hasn't been this sort of apocalyptic sort of month or two that a lot of people were predicting.
Yeah, that's fair to say, certainly. And then I suppose from a political point of view, a lot of cynics would say that the British government, particularly the analysis coming out of the UK Treasury pre-Brexit, was perhaps realpolitik. But again, I would really stress looking at data points over the course of 1 or 2 months. This is for more of the newspapers rather than real analysis.
So that 56% who feel that there's going to be a fairly significant impact from Brexit here, in what ways have they told you they see it impacting?
Again, it depends on the organisation, but you could have a direct impact in terms of fewer tourists perhaps coming into Dubai, and that's something we can discuss. It could be from the perspective of decisions that are made in HQ because of Brexit. Again, it could be perhaps more of an indirect impact. We had a lot of big, very large local companies here, and they may have been sitting in the audience, and I said this to them, you may be thinking that this doesn't impact you, but perhaps it impacts all your clients in the room, and therefore could impact how you get paid, it could impact competition. So again, it really depends on the organization itself. But in terms of the direct impact, I think for Dubai and for companies here, we have to recognize that I don't think it's devastating for Dubai in any way, but it's another factor that we have to think about for our businesses, especially when you factor in that the UK is the third biggest source market for Dubai as a tourist. I was looking at Q2 data, it was around 600,000 people. So then if you're Mr. and Mrs. Smith in Manchester or London, Brandy, and you're thinking, I love going to Dubai on holidays, it's a fantastic place. However, if you look at ADR for Q1 average daily rates in hotels, it was the top performing. They would view that or interpretate that as the most expensive hotels in the world. You have the currency situation, which relatively speaking makes it more expensive here. You have higher inflation due to the currency situation in the UK, putting downward pressure on purchasing power of these holidaymakers. And if I were to hazard a guess, I would say Mr. and Mrs. Smith may say, let's go to the Lakes District.
What about how companies are preparing for it, if at all? What have you learnt?
I think in terms of preparation, again, it depends where you're coming from. If you're coming from the UK, a lot of companies are looking at what are the decisions that are going to be made from HQ. I would say that for some of the British companies that we spoke with, they actually see that this is a big opportunity for the Middle East, for this region. One organization said to us that the sessions are very interactive. They're confidential in terms of we don't say who is in the room. But one of the organizations said that for him as vice president of the Middle East, he's actually now sitting at the top table with the global CEO because of the dollar-denominated contracts going in. So all of a sudden, we've become more important, relatively speaking, although volume-wise, the region is still small for MNCs.
Just a very quick question on your own country, Ireland. The Taoiseach, Enda Kenny, has come out and said that the European Commission ruling on Apple's Irish tax payments is damaging to Ireland and cannot be allowed to stand. He said that ruling was wrong. And I think, has the what's been going on with this tax thing sort of affected the Irish voters' sort of affection, if you like, for the European Union? Do you think that there could be a sort of knock-on effect, having watched Brexit happen, because obviously Britain sits firmly between Europe and Ireland? Has it affected the mood on the street?
It's a mixed picture. So some people, there's quite a bit of populism going on. Some people are saying that the Apple needs to pay. The man on the street is saying, hang on, we're talking about 14 billion euros or $14 billion. This will pay for our health budget next year, and this is our tax. And perhaps they're not looking into the fact that there's, I don't think anyone's right in this situation in many ways. The European Union has moved the goalposts in terms of how they came up with this ruling. And then the European Union is telling a sovereign state how to act on its business affairs. And then at the same time, for Apple, you can't enforce these rules retroactively against a sovereign state when some of these agreements were made 25 years ago. So it's unfair on Apple, it's unfair on the Irish citizens. I think from an Irish perspective, there is serious spotlight on how we conduct our business affairs with regards to organisations diverting tax through Ireland, not least with the introduction of BEPS, the Base Erosion Profit and Sharing Initiatives, by international institutions trying to stop organisations from bypassing paying a fair amount of tax.
Trevor McFarlane, the founder and CEO of EMEA, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Brandy.